Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Join the cult of the Spoilerverse, and welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenneth Cregan, and today on the show, well, it's Kwanzaa Osajefo, isn't it? Well, Kwanzaa stopped by, spoke with our very own Melissa Sercha, and they spoke in depth about his comic book Black. If you don't know what Black's about, basically, well, not basically, what it's about is that only Black people have superhero powers in the world. It's a very interesting take on the superhero genre, and Kwanzaa talks about how he was inspired by it, why he wrote it, the fact that it's been picked up by Warner Brothers, and so there's going to be a movie, maybe a TV show. I'm not too sure, but they do go into that, and it's very interesting. So why don't you sit back, relax, and take a listen to Kwanzaa Osajefo and Melissa in their own words.
Country, and I'm Melissa Sercha. Tonight on the show, I'm excited to welcome comic book creator and writer Kwanzaa Osajefo. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here tonight. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I mean, the week's just getting started, so we'll see.
Busy week planned.
No, but I mean, like, that's just any Monday, you know? You never know how things are going to go, so you're kind of like,
that's all right, true.
Today went well.
Right. It's still Monday, even in the apocalypse. So I want to
feel like that is like a great idea for like a short or a comic book. It's like, it's Monday, even in the apocalypse.
Nice. Feel free to use that. That's awesome. Well, I would love to talk to you, obviously, about your comic book, Black. It's a story that takes place in a world and political climate that's kind of similar to our own, but the twist is that only Black people have superpowers. What inspired this story, and what made you decide to set it in a modern world versus like a historical one?
I think there's the inspiration is a culmination of things. One part was my experience working as an editor at DC and Marvel, mm-hmm. and sort of noticing that there was a lack of people of color, specifically Black people, working at the company, mm-hmm. and that had a direct correlation to why there was a lack of representation in the content. So, you know, it wasn't anything that was Machiavellian or like malicious or anything like that, but it was more of a like lack of perspective and a lack of, you know, people there who had, you know, agency to put characters who looked like themselves into these stories, tell stories about characters that reflected their experience. And there was just this sort of like moment where I realized like, oh, that's something that impacts a thing that like I've always loved since I was a kid. And then obviously like, you know, life inspired that. I mean, just, you know, the experience of being a Black person in America, mm-hmm. there's a different experience in trying to navigate, you know, this country. And I think that, you know, it really was about me taking the two things that I loved and kind of, you know, scraping the veneer off of like superhero stereotypes in order to tell a story that like actually reflected, you know, our reality a little bit more. Because the best science fiction, you know, has that like really solid like hook in reality.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, if you look back over the last, well, since the beginning of time, there is a very one-dimensional point of view. So I think it's really important that that not always be the narrative. So I think it's awesome that you have brought that, you know, forward, and that more artists like you are doing that. So my hat's off to you for that.
Thank you.
So your main character, Kareem, what are some of the challenges that he has to face after discovering he has these superpowers?
So Kareem is an interesting protagonist. I didn't want to write a character who, you know, suddenly had, you know, everything handed to him, or because he gained superpowers, suddenly had all of the answers. You know, he's a 15-year-old boy who's, you know, he's just been assaulted and killed by the police, but he comes back to life, finds out he has superpowers. And now he's being, like, you know, pulled in different directions by all these clandestine forces that have, you know, been working to keep it a secret from, you know, the general public for centuries. And when you put a 15-year-old in that situation, like, it's not like they have, like, a wealth of experience to navigate that,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
So I really wanted to put what I felt, you know, a 15-year-old person would be in that situation. They're kind of like, you know, it's almost like a running start for him, where he's just trying to figure out, you know, who these people are, who he's supposed to be in this, what his role is. So I really, you know, thought that could be, like, an interesting protagonist, as opposed to somebody who, you know, gets the magic sword and all of a sudden they can, you know, perform miracles.
Right. Okay. And when you were writing this character, did you discover anything new about yourself?
I think it was an interesting exercise in exploring a lot of different perspectives that I have as a Black person, but also that I don't have, because you're trying to write all of these characters who, you know, are generally invested in, you know, their point of view. You know, they believe, you know, what they're doing is right. So there's antagonists in the story, but not necessarily, in my opinion, villains. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to, like, kind of try and invest myself in, you know, like, the character, oh, like, why he's so adamant about, like, you know, being, you know, a radical and, you know, trying to, you know, upset the status quo and, like, the systems that have been oppressing, like, his people. And then Theodore Mann, who, you know, is just really at his core a capitalist, and just someone who is almost a product of a system where he doesn't really have the moral compass to, like, care, you know, and what kind of person that is. You know, if you're on the opposite side of it, you can maybe rightfully so call that evil, but it's like a person who doesn't have that wherewithal is just operating, you know, based on their experience.
Right.
You know? And that's not to absolve them at all, but I mean, like, that's kind of where I tried to put my head in order to write those characters.
That must have been difficult to switch to that, you know, that type of point of view, where, you know, some of those characters coming from a place of ignorance, for lack of a better word. Was that difficult for you to kind of work through?
I think it was a struggle sometimes to feel like I was doing it accurately, you know, because they aren't, in a lot of cases, perspectives that I have, you know. So at a lot of time I was like, it was almost, you know, like trying to be a character actor.
it's like
all right, I'm going to try and get into this headspace of this character, and, like, this is why they would be motivated to do this or that, you know, while not necessarily holding those views, like, really and truly, you know, in myself. So when I write characters, I tend to write these, like, long psych profiles of them, you know, where I kind of detail, like, their past up into the present to dictate how they're going to operate, but also to keep myself honest, you know, when I'm writing them, so I can look back at that and say, like, oh, okay, that character probably wouldn't do that because they experienced this trauma, or this is what actually happened to them, so maybe this is how they would react. So it was an interesting exercise in trying to play those roles, in a sense.
Yeah, I bet. Did you have to do any type of research for that? I mean, did you try to reach out to anybody in those particular types of groups to get any kind of clarification or anything like that?
Not for this round. What I really did was I did a lot of reading of, you know, and a lot of studying of the characters who I kind of used or the people who I were kind of using as templates for these characters, so that I could say, like, all right, well, what if, you know, like, you know, Sir Richard Branson was like really evil? You know, like, right. What if he was like, you know, like, what if he was just like completely amoral or something like that? Like how, you know, and I mean, when you're like a businessman of any, like, you know, like wealth or like capability, mm-hmm. like you kind of are mm-hmm. in a sense, but you aren't, you know, it's like you think of somebody like, I was having a conversation with a friend a while ago about like Jeff Bezos. And I'm like, you know, he could just end homelessness. Like that would just be like a flex and yeah. it wouldn't put a dent in his wealth at all. And I'm like, I wonder why people don't do that. You know, because
I know
there's a limit to his lifespan. It's like you're not gonna like live any longer just because you're wealthy. Like you're like, why not just do it just to do it? Like, I mean, I'm kind of a petty, like nice person. Like I would do it just to be like, haha, US government.
Right. No, it's funny that you mentioned that because I've had a conversation like this not too long ago as well, where I basically was thinking, if you took like 10 of the world's billionaires or even just the United States billionaires, they could single-handedly, you know, give every single person that's not rich an income through this pandemic. You know what I mean? Like, you know, with the unemployment and all that kind of stuff. But if you took like 10 billionaires could single-handedly do it if they wanted to. But like you were saying, like, why don't they do it? You know?
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing to like explore in a character. It's like what they do versus what they don't do just as much, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, also, so Black was funded by a very successful Kickstarter. And so were you surprised by the outpouring of support when you reached your goal and you got fully funded and then it surpassed it?
Yes, I very much was, because I had friends who had done Kickstarters before, colleagues in the comic industry. And I really thought we were going to be hustling. And we hit our goal, our initial goal, in like 3 days. So like at the time I'd had the Kickstarter app on my phone and I was like, you know, getting alerts just, you know, to see like, oh, let's see how it's progressing. Like, do I have to like, you know, tweet a little more, Instagram a little more? But it was really 3 days of it just pinging constantly. And that was really, really gratifying. You know, when you put an idea out there in the world, you hope that it'll resonate with, you know, a few people, but the fact that it resonated with so many people and they were so willing to like help us make it into reality was really validating.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it sort of like, it's just spread like wildfire essentially. Do you think that was like word of mouth, or did you just do an aggressive marketing campaign?
I think it was because we managed to get picked up by, what was it? I'm not sure if it was like Deadline. Like it seems like such a blur now.
Like, I'm sure, yeah.
But I think it was like a major newspaper picked it up, and that just kind of like all of a sudden it started getting picked up by other papers and other outlets. Like it got picked up outside of the comics industry. And I think that's really what made it like kind of explode.
Yeah. So it was like media, essentially. That's really cool. Do you think you're going to use Kickstarter for like all of your future projects now?
Possibly. I mean, we are currently sending out rewards now for the sequel to Black White, because, you know, I'm clever. And, you know, we had a pretty successful Kickstarter for that one as well. And I've always, you know, been a really big fan of like technology, like, you know, shifting mm-hmm. how we, you know, produce media, how we consume media. And, you know, it was a huge game changer, like crowdsourcing, you know, or crowdfunding for, you know, indie creators, because you didn't really have to go through a publisher anymore. You didn't have to like, you know, go and make photocopies at like a Kinko's or whatever. Are there Kinko's anymore?
But I know I was like, wait, I don't think there are actually. That's great.
Yeah. But that changed, you know, and it's really a good thing to be able to put that out there, because I was absolutely prepared to fail. You know, I really wanted to put the idea out there and let that be the litmus test. I was like, look, if people don't respond to this and they don't back it, then I know I can stop wasting my time with it, essentially, and move on to a different project. But if they like it, you know, that's the great thing about crowdfunding. It like validates the idea.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, you know, as artists or writers, I'm a writer, we get imposter syndrome, you know, a lot, no matter how successful you get, or no matter how many people tell you you're amazing. I think it's just this weird thing. And I've talked to a lot of writers about it, that you just sometimes get imposter syndrome. So you're like, you're just expecting to fail. And then you're like shocked when you do well, you know?
Oh yeah, that's perpetual for me. That's like literally everything I write. I'm definitely a person who, if I could, I would just go back and rewrite everything that I've ever done constantly.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm never feeling like I got it right. So I think you're probably not a good artist if you don't have imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't question yourself at least a little bit, like, I feel like that's the thing that like drives you to like, you know, keep digging, to keep like searching and like, you know, mm-hmm. extrapolating those like ideas from within yourself, is like that little bit of doubt, you mm-hmm. know, because it's not crippling you. It's making you go like, okay, well, what if I keep trying? What if I keep pursuing this thing? You
know, yeah.
Maybe then I'll feel like I'm really doing it, but never quite getting there. And it's a weird thing because it sounds bad, but I don't really think it totally is.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting perspective on it, actually, because, yeah, it's the same thing where you push yourself to learn more and grow more if you're doubting yourself. So, you know, whether it's like going to workshops or, you know, reading craft books and, you know, listening to other writers talk, things like that, to get advice, or just the actual writing to, you know, practice and get better. I think that's a good point. So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I actually lost whatever I was about to say, so go ahead.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you about Black. How many issues, is that done, or how many issues do you have planned for that series?
So I had always envisioned Black as a trilogy. So, you know, there's Black and now there's White, and I kind of follow the whole Star Wars kind of trajectory of like, you know, there's New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and then there'll be Return of the Jedi. So, you know, the core books are three volumes, and I always felt like that would kind of like be the tent poles of the universe. And so we've done other books in between, like Black and White. So we did America's Sweetheart, which was a standalone YA graphic novel, and then Widows and Orphans, which is about child trafficking in the Sudan, and then Devil's Die, which is about drugs being brought into like, you know, like small POC communities. And it's all things that like I wanted to tap into, because again, like having that seed of like reality to base the fiction off of was always something that was interesting to me. And like, once you kind of like unpack the idea of like, well, what if only Black people had superpowers? It's like, well, then there would definitely be a Black market for them. And like, right. You know, yeah. Since you did, it's like, there might be narcotics that only affect, you know, Black people with superpowers. You know, there might be, you know, a young girl who didn't even know that other Black people had superpowers because she was raised by her, you know, conservative adopted family in the Midwest, you know? So right. There's like a lot of angles to explore in that universe that aren't just, you know, what I think people expected Black to be, which was, you know, that very amazing cover that Kari Randolph created. Mm-hmm. Like, we've tried to, you know, tell stories that explore different genres and perspectives, you know, because Black people aren't a monolith. There's like you know, conservatives, there's like liberals, there's anarchists, there's people who don't even subscribe to any of those things. There's, you know, LGBTQIA, like that's a whole nother, like you go.
Yeah, that's in a completely different. Yeah, totally. You have so many possibilities. So do you have more spinoffs planned? Like in development, or are they just like ideas floating in your head right now? Or
ideas floating in my head. Like, I did come up with the sequel for America's Sweetheart because people really enjoyed that book. It was an interesting one to do because our publisher, Black Mask, you know, was like, okay, Black was really great, so what's the sequel? And I told him, I was like, well, I want to do this YA graphic novel set in years. He's like, wait, what? Like, yeah, and it's going to be all in color and it's going to be kind of whimsical and, you know, aesthetic. And he's just like, I don't even understand. I'm like, because you can tell that kind of story in this universe, so let's do that. So I came up with the idea for the sequel to that. So that might be the next one that I work on in the universe. And then we'll see, because the other thing that I wanted to do is, you know, make the universe into a platform. So Devil's Die was the first book in the universe where I didn't script the entire thing. I just wrote the plot, and Vita Ayala, who's been doing a lot of great work over at Marvel, she's about to start writing New Mutants over there, wrote that story, you know, and I want to be able to, like, you know, kind of pass the baton, you know, after after creating those tentpoles, just like let people have at it, say like, go tell whatever stories in this universe you want.
Oh, that's really cool. You know, it's kind of, and just using this as a loose comparison, but when I think of something like The Walking Dead, right? And there, that world is constantly building. They're always coming up with spinoffs and, you know, new factions and this and that. And I think it's kind of similar to where you have this universe you've created that is, there's so many people in this universe, you know, so many different stories that you could tell going on in like different corners of the world or the country.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about like world building, because again, like you're taking the world that we know and you're just like you're just twisting it a little bit. And once you do that, then you're kind of looking at everything around you in the world and saying like, okay, well, all right, if only Black people had superpowers and nobody knew, like, well, like why was there slavery, or like, you know, why did this happen, or why hasn't this happened, you know, or like, you know. Were there any famous Black people who had superpowers? Certainly, yeah. We didn't even know. So I think like once you ask that question, it just like opens up like infinite possibilities for storytelling.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Did you address any of, and if you don't want to give any spoilers away, that's fine, but did you address any of those historical systemic issues, like you just said, with like slavery and, you know, famous, you know, jazz musicians from the Harlem jazz era? Did you touch on any of that, or did you just stick to like the modern story?
Not yet. I do give some hints to some of the characters' past and like past events, but I've yet to like fully explore like the far past. And those are some of the stories that I do want to spin out around some of the characters who are a bit older. But, you know, again, it's also just a lot of fodder for other people to play with too. So yeah. It's just like, if somebody has that story in them, like, and came to me, it's just like, hey, I really want to tell a story in your universe that takes place in like 1812. I'm like, okay, what's the story? And it's just like,
yeah, no, that's super cool. It sounds really interesting. I can't wait. Everybody get on that. So the other exciting news about Black, it's been acquired by Warner Brothers for, I believe, a film. And yes. How excited are you, first of all? And how much will you be involved in the adaptation?
So I'm a co-producer on the film, and it's something that was like really interesting, because the day that we launched a Kickstarter, we had an offer for film.
Oh my gosh.
Like, within hours. And like that first week, that first day was just like, I didn't have like a lawyer. I didn't have a manager. I didn't have anything. And the next thing, you know, like my phone's just ringing. I'm at work. And I was like, I don't know what that is. I don't know. I don't have a like agent. What? I still don't have an agent. I don't know what any of these things are. I just made a comic because I wanted to tell a story. But, you know, we had that offer, and it really became like this interesting practice of learning to say no to things, because there are a lot of studios, like, for, you know, quite some time, like really wanting to do this project. And, you know, we ended up working with Studio 8, who, you know, put together like, you know, a script and you know worked on adaptation. And then like Warner Brothers, you know, and some other people were like looking at the, you know, looking at it. And that was really just like mind-boggling, because, you know, this is something that I had come up with like almost 15 years ago, and you know, that we had, you know, put out into the world like 4 years ago, and now it's at Warner Brothers. You know, so it's like,
yeah, that's crazy.
Like, like, whoa, okay, I guess this is a real thing. Yeah.
Wow. And do you have any idea of when that's gonna start happening? Is like, is it in pre-production? Is it being cast?
That stuff I cannot talk about.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all right. But the script has been written, and it's Warner Brothers is very excited about it. That's what I could say.
That's awesome. We're excited too. So we'll have to keep look out on your Twitter feed for for the announcement.
Oh no, not my Twitter feed.
Well, let's get back to White, because I'm not really sure the premise. I did a little bit of research on it, but I wanted to hear in your own words Is this a continuation of Black? Is it a different story, or is it a sequel? And is it available?
So it will be available once all of our Kickstarter backers receive their rewards. So probably sometime next year, maybe I'd probably say early next year if we're, you know, on our P's and Q's. Of course, mm-hmm. COVID has knocked all of us on our heels in terms of production. Like, it really has. It's like, people are just like, where's my comic? I was like, dude, we're all locked inside.
Now I know.
But White is a continuation of Black. It takes place 3 years after the events at the end of Black. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the world has discovered that only Black people have superpowers. And it's all about the United States sort of reaction to that. They elect Theodore Mann as president. And I had written this before current events, so...
Interesting.
I don't prophetic. Know what I'm on. Like, I'm a little scared of, like, you know, putting the third part out in the world, because I'm just like, maybe I just should write it as like puppies and kittens. Maybe that's what happened. Like, right. If I can put that into the world, that would be fantastic. But it's really about, like, that, you know, visceral reaction people have to, like, that power shift and dynamic, and how much, you know, people push back against it. But it's also like a character focus on Theodore Mann's son, who, you know, I describe him as somebody who's, you know, a product of his environment, but his son truly is, because he's just been, you know, sort of this molded shadow of his father. And mm-hmm. he thinks that things are supposed to be a certain way, but there's just this, you know, thing, this hurdle, this Kareem, who's constantly, like, you know, showing him up in his way. And that's not something that he's used to. And, like, when confronted with those sort of things, he's just willing to, you know, like, bully and bludgeon his way through it, and is very frustrated, you know, and that isn't necessarily getting him the results that he wants. So it was really me trying to explore the idea of, like, you know, what if like a Donald Trump Jr. truly had an antagonist who was just constantly, like, pantsing him.
Yeah.
and not with any sort of malice, but it's just like, dude, I keep doing it because you keep coming into my space.
Right.
Like, I don't want to do it. Like, I'm trying to live, but you're just being a tool.
Yeah. So, and then with White, so, and then you said there's a third installment because it's a trilogy. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us anything about that aside from, I know you want it to be puppies and kittens, but.
I can say this, like, one of the biggest questions that people have had since, you know, hearing about the book is like, well, how is it that only Black people have superpowers? Why do only Black people have superpowers? And it's always been my goal to reveal that in the third book and have that sort of be the culmination of the story, but also probably be a catalyst, you know, even more so for the universe. And that's the only thing I can really spoil.
Okay. So the big reveal, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's the most important message that you want readers to take away from this trilogy?
I always find that to be an interesting question because, you know, I think that people tend to bring their own baggage to anything that they're consuming and take away, you know, mm-hmm. what they will because of that same baggage. You know, I even though I do believe that, you know, literature has a huge ability to, you know, influence and impact people, I really kind of feel like I can't dictate, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. necessarily what someone take away. I wouldn't necessarily know. I do know that my intention in writing the stories were to, you know, inject more of a Black experience and perspective into the sort of genre that I truly love, mm-hmm. you know, and just, you know, do the sort of things that, like, I always wanted to see more of when I was growing up, you know? Yeah. So for me, the takeaway, the thing that really gives me joy is when, you know, a younger, like, reader, Black kid or what have you, mm-hmm. is excited about the book when they've told me, and I've had this happen enough times where it's like I try not to get choked up anymore. But it's like they're like, I didn't know there were stories like this out there. I didn't know that, you know, there were characters out there that, you know, looked like me or spoke like me. And that is what I guess is important to me personally. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that it gives them some joy and it inspires them. And so, yeah, I guess that's it.
That's it. Yeah. And I guess I've read that your books are being taught in schools.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, I love it. Sometimes I kind of wince at it when people are like, I was like, which book? Like, and what grade? Because I do have parents come up, you know, when I'm doing shows or conventions, and, you know, their kids will like gravitate towards it because, you know, it's like, you know, very, you know, minimalist colors, red and black and white. And generally, like, I'll say to parents, I'm like, look, it depends on what you're comfortable with. You know, I'll give them the whole spiel, like, this is what the book's about. Yes, there's like, you know, adult language in it, like not particularly too many situations, but I mean, it's, you know, it's about as graphic as, you know, a Marvel movie.
Okay. You know? Yeah.
But, you know, that's also one of the reasons why I wrote America's Sweetheart, because I wanted to, you know, produce stuff in that universe that I felt was actually, you know, all ages appropriate. And so when that one's being taught in schools, I'm always like, all right, cool.
Yeah. You're like, I'm good with that one.
Yeah. And people really love that book. So I'm cool with it. But, you know, the Black has also been, you know, part of curriculums in a lot of, you know, college literature courses. And that's always been like really wild. You know, I participated in a few class discussions over the years. And it's always interesting to like listen to people dissect things in a story. Sometimes things where I was just kind of like, oh, maybe that, yeah, I totally meant that.
Yeah. I meant to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what you're saying about it being open to interpretation, because you write it with one intention, but then when people read it, they're going to sort of take their own, like you said, baggage and their own, have their own perceptions and their own theories and their own the fandom essentially is going to be like, oh, I think this is going to happen. And which is pretty exciting, I think, as a creator. Do you get a lot of people coming up to you at Comic Cons and kind of giving you their theories of what's going on?
Yes. And I try to like stick my fingers in mirrors and be like, la, 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 I didn't hear that. Just in case, like, I'm not stealing any ideas or anything like that. But, you know, that's the fun part about like this medium and these sorts of characters. I think in some respect, like the one thing I wish I had more time for is to like write it as like, you know, a more decompressed series.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, one thing that's apparent is like people want more of it. Like they already kind of see it as something, you know, in parallel to like an X-Men, but like I'm about, I don't know, 500 issues, 800 issues short,
right?
of that tapestry, you know, where it's like, you know, those characters haven't like existed quite as long, but, you know, hopefully it'll get there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's, how long has it been out now?
It was like 4 years ago we did the first Kickstarter, and we did the second one 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I mean, and I would have said a year ago, but I forget about COVID year. So,
right.
I mean, that's what we're all going to call it now. It's just
COVID year.
The COVID year.
The year which we will not talk about ever again. No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so that's pretty good. So four years roughly. And I mean, just imagine, you know, how much it's going to grow. And as far as the reader, you know, base as well, you know, especially when the film comes out, because that always attracts new fans. You know, a film comes out, people are like, oh, it's based on a book or a comic, I want to go read it. So you're probably going to see that exponentially grow in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the interesting thing about it, because, you know, it had this like sort of like explosive debut, but we've seen more and more fans of the book as the years have progressed. And it's one of the reasons I started, you know, going to conventions, because, you know, people it would sell out in comic shops and people didn't have any more copies, or, you know, mm-hmm. they just wanted to meet the creative team and what have you. And we were just selling a lot of books at shows. Like I go to shows now and like I leave with nothing, and that's great.
That's awesome.
It's like sweet, I don't gotta bring those boxes home.
Yeah. I know. Usually the last day people are giving them away to you. They're like, please take it.
Yeah, and that's been so great. Like, Like we've sold out sometimes like halfway through a show.
That's awesome.
I've had to like kind of like parse stuff out or go home and like take stuff from my own personal stash. Like I'm finally at the point where I don't have a personal stash really anymore. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, like, that's great. Cause that's, I think that's a lot of people, you know, they fear that like you fear like you're either going to have too many and you're going to look dumb at the end of it with like all of your boxes of books, or you fear that you're going to like run out the first day and then be like, what do I do with my table for the next 3 days?
Yeah. And that was the thing. Like I think the last time we were at New York Comic Con, like on Saturday, we were just like, does anybody want to buy our banners and tablecloth? Cause that's all we got.
like take table. It. I'll sign it. Take it.
So, but I mean, I don't think any artist has ever felt like dumb because they had inventory left over. That happened. Like that's just what happens. You know,
yeah.
Some, you have good shows, you have like shows that are weaker. So
yeah, no, that's just my own. That's my own thing. That was always my biggest fear is taking too many of my books, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, if I could throw out any sort of like pro tip out there, it's just like, don't worry about like selling out, you know? It's like, if you like make your table and a little profit, or, you know, or you sell out of all of your stuff, like in the first day, that's a good problem. Go enjoy the city for once. Like that, especially at a convention, it's just like I always find myself, you go to a convention and you're trapped inside the convention all day in some city you don't live in and you don't get to see the city. So it's like, oh, wait, I sold all of my books. Hey, Seattle.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I was actually supposed to be at the Seattle one this year. Yeah, yeah. I love that one. I go every year and my best friend lives in Seattle. So we make it a fun trip. But
last year was my first year and I didn't go and have a table. I just went, you know, to be a nerd and hang out with my comic friends. And I was just like, oh my God, I have to table at this show.
Oh yeah. No, it's such a cool vibe there. Everyone's just super friendly. And, you know, I always meet so many cool people when I'm there. It's such a beautiful city too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, speaking of artists, you've worked with some fantastic artists. What's that like collaborating with people who just really get your vision and that you gel with?
It's really awesome. But I mean, you know, 10 years as an editor, you meet a lot of artists. And one of the things that has always been key with me is like, you know, working with people who, you know, I not only respect and like their work, but I like them as people, you know? And one of the people who I really, really just enjoyed working with so much was Jamal Igle. We had done The Ray together at DC. And like, I was just not just blown away by his art, but by his ethic and by his speed. He's a very detailed artist.
Oh, wow.
Like he's a true master, and his layouts could be comics. Like he can just dash something off or you'd be like, no, we can actually print that.
His first draft.
Yeah. But he's such a craftsman that, you know, Jamal can, you know, really take, you know, a scene and give it life. And, you know, Kari is another person who, you know, I've just always respected and, you know, loved their work. And he like more than over delivered, because when I first brought the project to him, you know, I was looking for, you know, a Kari Randolph signature sort of cover, you know, and his style is very unique. You recognize his art when you see it. And one of the things that he told me after reading, you know, like the script was, now I have something different in mind. He's like, just, if you trust me, it's going to be dope. And I was just like, well, but you know, I really, you know, wanted to do something for the streets, you know, I wanted like that kinetic hip hop art that you do. He's like, no, I don't think this is that. He's like, just, it's, I'm just going to say one word to you, Banksy. And once he said that, I was like, okay. And then he delivered that iconic cover that literally set the tone for the rest of the covers in the series. Because once he did that, like, I just kind of got the ball rolling for like, oh, okay, this is the statement that we're making. Okay, right. So the next cover is going to be this. And the next cover is going to be this. Then, like, it's almost like he never should have, like, uncork that genie.
That's so cool that you said that. That's total Banksy vibe. Like I was like, where have I seen this sort of similar feel before? That's really cool.
Yeah. And so for the covers to White, we went with World War II propaganda, Russian propaganda posters.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of the aesthetic for those covers, because we really just wanted to capture those two different sorts of realities, different mm-hmm. sorts of like tones for the books. I don't know what we're going to do for the third one.
maybe a Justin Bua vibe or something, right?
maybe. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll just do watercolors.
Watercolors. Something totally different.
Again, puppies and kittens.
There you go. Yeah.
It's funny because like the other thing that we had done, so the cover to issue 4 of Black, we had come up with that, very early, because we kind of did all the covers together right away. Mm-hmm. And so the cover to 4, which people have coined Honky Kong, is I did not give it that name, but I love that name. I was like, I wish I had come up with that myself, but you guys said it. I'm just repeating your words.
It's pretty funny.
But we had come up with that cover as sort of a joke because it was prior to the election of 2016. And, it was meant to, make the statement that it was making, but not with any sort of intent that, Donald Trump would actually become president.
Right.
And it actually hit the shelves the day he took office. So I was just sort of like, I don't know, if I'm tapping into some sort of like future sense or other universe, like again, puppies and kittens on the next pod.
I know. I was going to say, it's starting to get nervous here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with everything that's happened, specifically this year, just because everything's sort of, I don't know, I guess because we're at home and we're been quarantined, so everything feels like it's in our faces more than it, it's ever been, particularly with politics and with police brutality. Do you feel like it's important to you to use your platform and storytelling to sort of amplify those voices, and not just in creating stories, but also in encouraging, other young artists to pick up the pen or and to do what you do as well?
Well, if anything that I do encourages young people to make comics, then I'm all for it. Like that's, seeing other people like myself do it is what inspired me to do it. As far as politics go, I mean, there's, and I don't think there's any apolitical comics out there really. It's maybe aside from stuff from Scholastic like Dogman. and maybe they are, because I've never read Dogman, so I could be wrong. But I think there's this misconception that there was ever a time where comics weren't political, but things in them are politicized. Like from my perspective, like I'm writing stories from the Black experience, and the Black experience is one that has a very abuser oppressed relationship with the police. Like that's just a fact. For me, it would be difficult to write a story about a young man like this in the environment that he is in and not have something like that happen. Like I could write it so that it doesn't happen, but I don't feel like that would be authentic and true to that experience, because that's a reality for a lot of people. But people will consider that politics, whereas like there's nothing political about it. That's just a reflection of reality.
Yeah.
But when you think about just the idea of like superheroes as a concept, it's like that's vigilantism, that's a political response to society. That's the individual putting on a cape or putting on a mask and deciding to take the law into their own hands, which is technically illegal. So it's the sort of thing that like you accept it because it's fantastical, but in all reality, these individuals would be sanctioned by the government, arrested, or they should be, or if they're not, why aren't they? So there is no comic out there, at least the ones that we're used to reading, especially superhero stuff, that aren't political in some vein. I mean, when you think about some of the best, like biggest stories in comics history, it's just like, you can't say that like Watchmen wasn't political. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't even say that like Marvel Civil War was political. It's called Civil War.
So right. No, exactly. And I think what's interesting too is when you read comics when you're a kid, you don't see that aspect, at least, growing up in my generation, I'm Gen X. So, you're kind of sheltered from that kind of stuff. And then when you get older and you reread a comic, you're like, oh, I get it now, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's because politics has been used as like this sort of like, you know, sort of code word for something like that's, you know, has ill intentions. But when you think about, you know, just being a child, there's a politics of the schoolyard. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a hierarchy. There's like groups that have powers and groups that don't. Like there's right. injustices.
So true. Yeah?
And I think that's why like young people will read comics and, you know, have some sort of like connection with them, because they see those injustices and they live out those power fantasies through those characters, because those things are actually a real part of their existence. So again, it's interesting for people to make any claim that like, you know, my comics are more political than any other ones, because I'm like, right. I really don't see how that's true.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. Awesome. So if you could go back in time and give your teenage self a piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, man. I don't know, because I'm such a sci-fi nerd that like I feel like the minute you said that, I was like, oh, now we're going to do Butterfly Effect? Like, I don't know. Like I'm going to go Ashton Kutcher this? I don't know. Sure. Like I would just give myself a lottery number. Maybe that's
set the time continuum.
Then, right, but then who knows what that would do? Because then I could become some like rich prick. I think the advice that I would probably give myself is to start writing my ideas sooner.
Mm,
you know, yeah. or like putting them together sooner and pitching. But even that, when I just said that out loud, I'm like, no, because then I might have just ended up pitching to like publishers and like, yeah, I might, you know, at this stage in my life be like some big notable writer, but I'd be a big notable writer who's just doing, you know, Marvel or DC work, and I never would have created Black. So right. it's again, this is me being a nerd. It's like, no. Oh my God, there's too many possibilities, Marty.
I love it. Yeah. I didn't even think about that when I was formulating the question, but no, yeah, your sci-fi brain has got me thinking now.
It's a legit question. I just nerded it to death.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's great. That's the best answer. Okay, so what advice would you give to someone who wants to be where you're at and to have success and to start a career in comics?
I would say just pick something and do it. That was the best advice I got, because I've got so many ideas for so many different books. And it's funny because Black wasn't even originally on my top 10 list of stuff that I wanted to do. Mm. But, you know, I got the advice like, just pick one and do it. You know,
yeah.
Because you'll spend more time spinning your wheels and trying to perfect something. Like Black's not perfect, you know, it's just the thing that I decided to do. And I feel like any piece of art, you put it out there and let the world just kind of have it and keep moving, you know, okay. Working yeah. on your next piece, working on your craft.
Nice. Yeah. I like how you describe yourself as the creative architect. I really like that. What does that mean to you specifically?
Oh, it's funny because it was a term that was, it's an actual job title, because I was hired by the French publisher Humanoids to create a universe for them. They wanted mm-hmm. to sort of bring their sensibilities into the American publishing world. And so I helped put together three of their tentpole books and kind of create like the Bible and the rules for that universe. And the role was creative architect. And I was just like, oh, I like that. That's a good title. I'll take it. And, you know, it's one that like I'd like to apply to any of the other work that I do from now on. Instead of author, it's like, oh, creative architect.
I love that. Yeah, I saw that on your profile and I thought, oh, that's really cool. Why didn't I think of that? Yeah, no. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy week to chat with me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks again for having me on. This has been great.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome getting to know more about you and your career. Everyone, please go check out Black and other fantastic comics over at blackmaskstudios.com. And yeah, thanks so much for being here. It's been a real pleasure.
It really has been. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Tell us what you thought. Give us a little comment down below, or, you know, you can reach us at spoilercountry@gmail.com and give us all your thoughts if you so choose. We're also on Twitter and Facebook and, you know, all the social media stuff. If you want to hear more like this, then I highly suggest going over to spoilerverse.com and just check us out. There's a lot there. There's a lot of back issues, is what I like to call them, of tons of amazing people. Tons. You'll be shocked with people there. I mean, Tommy Chong interview is back there, and Robert Wool, and Eric Larson, and oh my God, the list just goes on. Walt Simonson, Louise Simonson, the list goes on and on and on. And I really highly suggest you go back there and check it out. You can also, on our website, spoilerverse.com, check out other podcasts like Bridging the Geekdom and Funny Book Forensic and Gunslinger Narrative. I mean, there's just so many. I can't even list them all. Misery Point Radio. I'll forget more than I remember. It's unreal. None of it's behind a paywall. Yet. So have fun with that and check out all that you can, because it's a lot of fun. If you so choose and you like what you're hearing, you like what we're doing, maybe click that store link, order yourself a t-shirt, you know, a hoodie or something. Make yourself look fly as hell. It just keeps the lights on. Helps us out. And yeah, that's a show. I'm going to let you guys go on that. Thanks for stopping by. Hope to hear from you again. And don't forget, in an oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. And as Cthulhu compels you to do, open the mind and read more.